Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
True Hauntings is a Human Labs original podcast.
The Ostrich Inn in Slough, just outside of London, England, has seen its fair share of spooky happenings in its 800-year history. Most famously, the murders that were allegedly committed in the 17th century by the then landlord Mr. Jarman and his wife, who came upon a very profitable way of making extra income.
Join us this week as we go back to England to examine the case of the infamous Ostrich Inn. Murder, thievery, highwaymen, it has it all. Hi, I'm Anne.
And I'm Renata, and it's time to dig deep into history once again in this episode of True Hauntings.
Anne and Renata have been investigating paranormal occurrences for the past 20 years. They have been at the center of various unexplained phenomena and have witnessed countless ghostly experiences. The duo now turn to high-profile cases that have attracted the eyes of the world. Between the dimensions we see and the dimensions we don't, supernatural forces are at play. Evil lurks within the shadows of our homes and in the darkest corners of our minds. It follows us like a shadow, forever. This is where nightmares become reality. This is True Hauntings.
Hey, Renata, how are you feeling, girlfriend?
Just to
punch it home there, have another hack.
I am getting better. It was 2 weeks of absolute misery with some sort of viral infection or something that it was. They said it could possibly be a bit of a pneumonia, but, you know, whatever it was, laid me flat for 2 weeks and I was worth nothing.
Yeah, it was pneumonia, trust me. The way you were coughing and hacking and carrying on, that was pneumonia, and you even had the spots on the x-rays show up.
Yeah.
At least it wasn't Miss Rona. We don't want Miss
Rona.
Well,
that's what they were worried about. They were sort of saying that, you know, anything that becomes a spot needs to be looked at as a possible blood clot.
Ooh.
Because, you know, I'm of that age.
You are of that age. Where things could happen. Things fall off, break off, snap off.
And never come back again.
I'm worried you might have a fall.
I'll put a hip out and that'd be it. Out to pasture after that.
Slip a hip, that's okay. We can still get a microphone in front of you, even if you're lying in a field half dead. I'll just pop that microphone on the side and say, Renata, it's True Hauntings time, let's go.
Right, I'll be right.
And then we'll get a...
That's true. Oh, what else has been happening?
Oh, well, dear old Rona has raised her head and because of that we've had tours cancelled left, right and centre.
Yeah.
Sorry. We are out of the Greater Sydney area and we did get locked down for those 2 weeks because we were in the Blue Mountains for a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
But no Rona for us. Luckily we're in the Newcastle Hunter region.
Mm-hmm.
But we still all have to be wearing masks, and a lot of the places that we do tours at are very nervous
mm-hmm.
and have cancelled, and fair enough. But yeah, it doesn't help when that's your only source of income, does it?
That's true. And I had this poor lady email me this morning going, are there any tickets available for Dubbo? I've gone, how many times have I put it up on...
Oh, no, you've tried and tried.
...on Facebook. And now how many times have I put it up saying it's cancelled?
Yeah.
And, yeah.
But if anyone wants to support us on our Patreon account, if you do have a Patreon account, if you love what we do, pop over there. The one I really strongly advise, and it's not just because it's the highest tier, is the Grand Pooh Bars, because that's where all the fun and the shenanigans happen in that particular group. But look up Anne and Renata, Frightfully Good, on Patreon, and feel free to join our family.
Mm.
Any donations there are gratefully accepted at this stage of our lives.
And look, people are saying at the moment that, you know, 1 month can either mean survival or closure for businesses. And many businesses, not only the ones that we run, are at that point where if you don't support in some way, it's like the last straw that breaks a camel's back.
Yeah.
We're feeling that we're doing this for nothing.
Buying online with all the smaller stores at the moment that I can buy my food from and getting it delivered.
Yeah.
And it's costing me a little bit more, but I know that it's going to keep that family going a bit longer.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm doing
true.
A bit. I ordered wine the other day. That's going to help.
That will help.
I do like my Chardonnays.
Chardonnays.
My Sauvignon Blanc.
But at the moment we can't go anywhere really. Can't do much other than entertaining everyone with some lives,
yeah,
I think, and you know,
we can run some things on the Australian School of Ghost Hunting.
Yes, we can.
We'll pop some courses up there, and if you can't watch live when we do the live ones, you can watch them later, so you don't feel like you have to be there for the live. But the live is where we'll answer the questions as you ask, etc. But let's get on with today's show.
Let's.
I started my tour alone. Walking out of the Elizabethan room, the next room I entered was a small bar behind it. The lights were off. I cast my eyes around and, after a short while, left the room. Next, I entered the room next door, the blue room. This was just before 11:05 p.m. and again, the lights were off. As I stood inside, my face started to flush and tingle, and I sensed such an oppressive feeling of hostility and discomfort growing on me that I could not bear to stay in the room and made a hasty exit. As I left, I shuddered violently and shook. But once I went back into the corridor again, I felt fine. Later, I returned to the room a couple of times, once with a similar result, and then on an occasion when others were in there and the atmosphere seemed less thick. On the fourth approach, when the room was empty and in darkness, I noted the following in the report. This time, however, I approached it alone and stood outside the door, peering into the darkened room. As I stood there, I suddenly felt such a strong sense that something within the room was dashing out towards me from around the corner that I started and, rather unprofessionally, ran off. At 1:30 a.m, having told this to no one, I was talking with a fellow investigator, Jean, in the bar downstairs, who said that she had sensed a very oppressive atmosphere in an upstairs room and described it as the room that pushes you out. It turned out to be the blue room.
And the most exciting thing about this particular story is that we have been to the Ostrich Inn.
Yes, we have twice.
Twice.
Ooh, we went back for a second time because it was so
good. We did. And it's one of those places that we really enjoy going into because parts of it still remain very much like the original. Mm-hmm. So you have these rickety stairs heading yes. up into these tiny little rooms where no wall is straight and the same height, and the ceilings can be buckling, and it just is has this romantic feeling for people like us who are not accustomed to buildings like that yeah. living in Australia.
Yeah, and it's got the beautiful whitewashed walls and exposed wooden beams.
Yes.
Oh, it's glorious.
Yes.
Didn't we stumble upon it because we arrived in London a day early because my time changes weren't very good at when I was trying to work out when we were going to arrive. Oops.
Yes.
And we were looking for places to visit and mm-hmm. you found it.
Mm-hmm.
So we just popped in
mm-hmm.
and we said, we're going to come back here one day and stay. Mm-hmm. And we did.
And we did. And that's a story in itself.
That is. We'll save that for later.
But as with all of these stories that we are finding and really digging into, there is more to it than meets the eye. And often it's a little bit upsetting by the time you've finished
mm.
because it kind of doesn't turn out to be what you'd hoped it would be.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
Yeah.
Because I love the Ostrich Inn. It is a glorious little place mm-hmm. in a glorious little village. But let's just get into the story.
Let's get into it.
Yep. So I'm going to read a little bit about the history here. And this comes from a book that I found online,
mm-hmm.
which is all about the old inns in England. And it's very descriptive. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to read some of the information that is about the Ostrich Inn in Colnbrook. Romance, as we have already seen, was enacted in many ways in the inns of long ago. Love and hatred, comedy and tragedy, and all the varied moods by which human beings are swayed have had their part beneath the roofs of the old hostelries. As how could they fail to do in those times when the inn was so essential and intimate a part of national life? The romantic incidents in which old inns have their part are in two great divisions, that of old folklore and the other of real life. To the realm of folk tales belongs a story told of an ancient hostelry that stood on the site of the Ostrich in Colnbrook.
Can I just say I love the name Colnbrook? Because you know how Australians, we go, yeah, Colne. We
Colne.
Actually mean Colin.
Colin Carpenter.
Yeah, Colne. We had a comedy character called Colin Carpenter.
So, very Australian.
Colnbrook.
So the decaying coaching town of Colnbrook in Middlesex, 17 miles from Hyde Park Corner on the Great Road to Bath, is little changed from the time when the coaches ceased running through it 70 years ago. Colnbrook is perhaps the best illustration of a coaching town ruined by railways that it is possible to discover, and certainly the nearest to London. How great its fall since those prosperous days in the 1550s, when it was incorporated as a market town. Its charter was renewed in 1632, and judging from the many houses in its narrow street built about 1700 to 1750, the prosperity of the place survived unimpaired for certainly considerably more than over a century. It is now merely a village, but as a result of its former highway importance, still a place of inns. There are at least 10 even now surviving, and it is quite safe to assume that any important-looking old house, now in private occupation, facing the long thoroughfare, was once a hostelry. The oldest and most interesting building in Colnbrook is the Ostrich Inn, whose long gabled timber and plaster front is picturesque, rambling, and shabby outside.
It is beautifully maintained.
It
it's
is
stunning.
Beautifully, yes. Whoever and has taken it over has just done a beautiful job.
And the food
job.
Was good too.
Yes.
Because it's all about the food.
The present Ostrich is the successor of a much more ancient inn. There have been, in fact, several inns on this site. The first appears to have been a guest house or a hospice, founded by one Milo Crispin and given in 1106 wow. in trust to the Abbey of Abingdon.
Abingdon.
For the good of travellers in this world and the salvation of his soul in the next.
Oh, okay. So he was building a hospice place so that he could get to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Good-o.
It would seem to be from this circumstance that the inn obtained its name, for it was earlier known as the Osbridge, a kind of orthographic halfway house between a former hospice and the present ostrich.
Oh, so that's how they got the name ostrich, do you reckon?
Well, that's one of the theories.
Yeah.
One of the theories.
Because the ostrich is not a bird that's associated with England around that time frame.
No, no. Now, while I was researching, one of the issues that I had here was with the dates.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we're talking about the Ostrich Inn is, number one, we were there, which makes it terribly important.
Yep, yep.
And number two, there is a great story associated
there
with the
inn. There is.
And about murders that occurred mm-hmm. within the place. The problem is that all the documentation you find tells you different dates about when these murders happened.
Yes, like we found that out even like we're doing our little intro, and the intro said that the murders had happened in the
13th century.
Yeah, and I'm going, I'm sure it's not the 13th century. And they've looked it up. We found four different centuries.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we found right at the very beginning, which this particular article says, not 50 years after the hospice was given to Abingdon Abbey, these murders occurred. So that's probably the earliest mm-hmm. mention. Then we go to the 13th century, the 16th century, 17th century. So take your pick.
All right. Well, let's tell us what the murders were about mm-hmm. and who allegedly did all this stuff and we'll go from there.
All right. According to this pleasant and famous history, there was once upon a time in the days of Henry I, one Thomas Cole, a wealthy clothier of Reading, who was used frequently to travel on his business between the town and London. Commonly he journeyed in company with two intimate clothier friends, and he himself was a worshipful man of honesty and great wealth.
I wonder if they had clothier parties together at the Ostrich Inn. Oh, just that word clothier.
Clothier.
Clothier and two intimate friends. Mm-hmm. I'd see them doing dress-ups.
Mm.
Sorry. Yep, just my mental musings.
Yep, yep. So the three would usually dine at the Ostrich on the way to London and on return sleep there. So we are asked to believe that this businessman, Thomas Cole, on such occasions gave the money he carried into the care of the landlady overnight, and that by this misplaced confidence he was marked down for destruction.
Ooh.
So Jarman, the innkeeper, and his wife had long been engaged in what was rather delicately styled the systematic removal of wealthy guests.
Systematic removal.
Mm-hmm.
And murder.
Yep. And had devised an ingenious murder trap in the principal bedroom by which the bed firmly secured to a trap door was in the dead of night when the house resounded to the intended victim snoring, plunged suddenly into a huge copper field with boiling water pot placed in the room below.
So basically they got them rotten drunk, helped them up to bed, got them into bed, and there was this contraption.
Mm-hmm.
So that once that they were sound asleep, the bed angled up, a trapdoor opened, and the body slid off the bed into a vat of water, or I heard oil as well,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
where they instantly died.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So he was polished off, as Sweeney Todd himself would say, and should it happen that other guests of the night before asked after the missing one, they would be told that he had taken his horse early and gone away.
They just left early. They yeah. wanted to get home to the missus.
Yes.
So
yes.
I've gone home now.
We saw.
We did.
This contraption. made up as little models.
Yes.
So
yes.
They have this when you walk in, the landlord at the time, which I don't think is the same landlord that it is that's there now because the whole place went up for sale again in 2020, was very open in telling us the story. We actually have a little video of some information that
he gave us.
Yeah.
Oh, you'll have to pop that up on our Facebook page. Everyone head over to the True Hauntings Facebook page and we'll put that up a day or two after this episode goes live.
Yeah. So we did a little interview with him and he took us up and around and he showed us this contraption of how it worked.
Yeah.
We were allowed to stay in the room.
Yes, they were so generous with their time, weren't they? So was this the first or the second visit?
This was the second visit.
The second visit. Mm-hmm. They were actually that into all of it that they allowed us to spend as much time as we wanted in that room because mm-hmm. there was nobody there that night.
That's true.
And there's another whole story there, but we'll get to that later.
Mm-hmm. Now, so they had this mischievous plan that anyone that was quite wealthy would literally be polished off, never to be found again. The victim's horse would then be taken to a distance and disguised. I don't know how you disguise a horse.
Put a frock on it. I'll put a nice necklace on it and smacked it on its ass and said, off you go, honey.
The person's clothes would be destroyed and his body thrown into the Colne or into the Thames.
I'm still laughing every time you say Colne. I like Colne.
And his money added to the fortune of the host and his wife. Now, see, here we have also a problem because here it says that, well, they drowned him in a vat of water, mm-hmm. which is allegedly boiling.
A boiling vat of water or oil, yes.
Yeah. And then his body was thrown into the local river.
Yes.
But there are other stories where the body would go into the boiling vat of oil mm-hmm. and then Mrs. Jarman would make pies.
Oh, see, that feels like a Sweeney Todd reference to me. But I think they would only use oil if they were going to get good crackle out of it. Mrs. Jarman, your crackle is sensational today. What's your secret? Oh, I can't tell you, love.
They'd put me in jail if I told you what happened.
I marinated it in some beer. That's how I got it.
Oh, my gosh. You'd get a fellow coming in. Mm-hmm. Yep. He'd go into the room, mm-hmm. which they kind of called the condemned cell, above the copper, and by the next morning would doubtless have been floating inanimate in the Thames. Oh. So they said.
Apparently there were, the river ran right underneath the house or right next to the house.
Yes.
But I don't remember seeing a river when we were there.
No. We didn't go out the back and have a look though.
No, we didn't.
No. But
we didn't know all this information. Well, we knew some of it, but not the nitty gritty.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other issue with this is when you dig deeper is that you find out that maybe not all is true.
Right. I hope you're not going to ruin my bit.
No, I'm not. After inviting wealthy travellers to sleep on a specifically made hinged bed, Jarman would say to his wife, "There is now a fat pig to be had if you want one." And she would answer, "I pray you put him in the hogsty till tomorrow." The victim would then fall through a trapdoor into a vat of boiling water.
Soup.
Now, are you going to mention the story of Derek Okora?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, I won't interrupt you then.
Boy, do I have a story for you.
I've got things. I've got plenty of notes here, but it's probably the same sort of stuff that you've got. And the most interesting thing in this is the part about the ghosts and the stories.
Yes. Well, is it?
I think it's intriguing because now I feel really foolish.
Having
been there twice and going, we're in the room where it all happened.
I know.
Then to find out that maybe not.
Well, let's just before we jump to any conclusions, weigh up the evidence that's there.
Okay.
So first off, I'm going to report the sightings because that's important. Mm-hmm. But I must say that when I was researching this, I just kept finding the same stories over and over and over. And I went from probably about 30 different links trying to find stuff. Mm-hmm. And I went, I'm just going to have to draw the line. I haven't found the hook yet that normally makes me go, oh, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, no, one more search. So I did one more search and I went into about 3 or 4 pages, the Google search, and I found it. I found my hook. I got so excited. So now I've got 10 tons of information and I've got to try and cut it down. So I'll try not to speak too fast, but.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So one of the victims that we think we've seen there is Thomas Cole himself.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly the name of the town has been named after him, mm-hmm. Colnbrook.
Colnbrook.
Colnbrook. So it draws ghost hunters from all around the world. I mean, yes. We were one of them.
Yes.
And they showed us the room where the tilting bed was located, and it supposedly has this strange, oppressive atmosphere, which was what I took the soundscape from.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually from somebody from the Ghost Club. So the Ghost Club, which is a very famous club in England, the mm-hmm. oldest ghost club on record in mm-hmm. the world, they did their monthly visit or whatever it was to a haunted location. It was the Ostrich Inn. Now, the landlord, who was a diehard skeptic, you've always got a diehard skeptic in there, first started working there and didn't believe any of it until he started hearing the strange noises and seeing ghostly figures and objects moving by themselves, all in a day's work at the Ostrich Inn.
Mm-hmm.
Two other ghosts that are reported is your traditional Victorian lady. You know mm-hmm. how we've always got a Victorian lady mm-hmm. as a haunt?
Mm-hmm.
And a shadowy figure that seems to be wandering the upstairs corridor. Many of the staff at the Ostrich, and we spoke to quite a few of them, mm-hmm. and they're rattled staying mm-hmm. there. They're really quite rattled working at the Ostrich. They've entered locked rooms where the lights and electrical equipment are all switched on. Now, there's also the infamous ladies' bathroom, the ladies' loo, where apparently that would have been where Jarman stored the bodies.
Right.
So that gives you good weight to the reason mm-hmm. that would be haunted mm-hmm. there.
I remember being told about the ladies' loo because you had to go up some stairs.
I think so, yes.
To get to it, yes.
It actually says downstairs near the ladies' restroom. There's been felt cold spots and some have felt that they're overwhelmed with feelings of despair. Now, Mary Jarman, who is the wife, who would always say, we've got a fat pig in the house today. She haunts the stairs and has apparently been seen sitting at the top of the stairs. Also, there is a report of a young girl as well. I didn't find much reference to her, but I just want to throw it out there that that's, you know, one. We've got a barmaid at the Ostrich that refuses to use that toilet because she's felt an invisible female presence. There was actually a report of somebody who visited there, the bathroom, and she'd been washing her hands when she turned to see a woman in full Victorian dress standing just a few feet away from her. It's terrifying. There's also a report there of a black figure standing behind her boss as she was talking to them. But let me get onto the Ghost Club report. It was, like, very thorough, very impressed. So the Ghost Club was there for quite a few hours, and they had their psychics in there, and one of the psychics picked up on the fact that that they had a girlish laugh, and they felt it was a girl around about the age of 16. There's also descriptions of feeling watched. And there was a previous visitor who had been there that suggested there was a young girl who had hung herself. So that was in, remember that beautiful room upstairs, the function room with all the exposed beams? That's where she was meant to have hung herself. Then they've got their platform medium, Ken Marsh, who reported that there was a male presence in the bar. And he reported back to the team that his name was John, and then he showed himself, but he felt that there was no threat from John, whoever John was. And interestingly, there is a report later on about a paranormal team that went in there in 2003, and they actually picked up on a John as well, who lived there during Queen Elizabeth the first time.
All right, okay.
Now, let me just get into some of the various rooms. So there's a Jacobean room, which is up on the first room, and that's that first floor, sorry, and that's that function room that we were talking about. They said that somebody did some crystal dowsing.
Oh.
I wonder what crystal dowsing is. I wonder if it's a pendulum.
Probably. Yes.
It seemed to suggest that there was one male and one other present. Feeling in the room is oppressive but not unpleasant, like being in a very crowded room. When spending some time in the room later on, Philip describes a feeling of many people and impressions of swathes of movement on the floor. Somebody also witnessed an orb. Don't. She had the impression that this orb was an old man's bearded face. I think she zoomed in too far. Anyway... Let's get on to the...
No, look, if she had seen it with her own eyes, that's a different thing. That's a different thing. I remember that room really well. I thought it was quite beautiful, but I didn't feel anything in there at
all. I didn't feel anything either. And look, I have to admit that the room that was the dreaded dastardly room, I felt nothing.
Yeah, but it has been changed so much.
It has.
And kind of we spent a bit of time on the floor staring into the shower because that's where allegedly the bedhead and the trapdoor was because the room had been changed.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so... That's the life of a paranormal investigator, sitting there for hours looking into the shower.
That's right, going, ooh, did I just see an orb? Anyway, the Elizabethan room. So one of the members felt that there was something hovering near the window. Then there was someone else who was sensing a condition to the left side of the head, which he likened to a heavy blow to the head, and they could smell a very strong, pungent odour. Somebody farted. That was the sort of thing that happened in there. Then we have the stairs, the infamous stairs, where they're supposed to see Mary Jarman sitting there. And the area of the ladies' toilet. Shirley and the rest of the group did seem to have results while dowsing in the ladies' loo.
A lot of room in there.
No, and they had the sensation that they were going to fall, that they were going to fall over or the floor was going to drop. Shirley reported seeing a misty swirl on the ceiling over the stairwell. Did I say something funny? Oh, dear.
I just thinking, one too many hot ciders. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, okay. Then we go to the attic. Did we get up to the attic?
No.
They were showing us doorways to everywhere. So they say he's several of the more agile and adventurous investigators.
Those under 50.
Took turns going up into the attic. They said it was a bit dusty and constantly gloomy. Fancy that. Which could give you the false sensation of something happening up there.
Yep.
They felt sudden drafts and cold spots, which is to be expected in the attic, I suppose. But they did have an impressive sudden drop in temperature of over 6 degrees at one point.
Ooh, someone opened a door.
Oh, you'll be pleased to know that Ken there, oh, I'm going to lose her. Ken sensed a great amount of energy up there and reported seeing green orbs.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, and they dubbed it Slimer. So Slimer was up in the attic. Now, the wine cellar, everyone did feel uncomfortable, but it seemed calm and peaceful. Probably because they were drunk. Anyway, then we move on to the blue room. So that's the infamous room. Everyone sort of talking about residual energy, feelings of foreboding, depression, distress and discomfort. So
we got nothing. I love the way we go to these places and there's nothing.
There was one person that actually went under a physical
transformation. Really?
They were sitting in a corner. Philip and Ian were sitting in the corner of the blue room and on camera, underwear. Oh, stop it. How can I get through this? They underwent a great deal of profound and disturbing face changes. That's it. We've got the giggles. Nothing's going to go right now. All right. Now, look, I want to get over to jump over to these parts over here. Like, there's lots of stuff there. They're all talking about, you know, it's validating everything about the stories and the feelings and the terror and everything. But I want to jump to this little spot here. Now, this is from a blog spot called Seeks Ghosts. And they actually mentioned that this whole ostrich inn thing reminds them of H.H. Holmes' serial killer, where he would be bumping people off at his place that he had accommodation at. They also mentioned they had all these little tidbits of information in there that Jarman would take the horse and clothes and sell them to the closed-lipped gypsies.
Oh.
And he would dispose of what was left of their corpses in a nearby river. But I hadn't heard the mention of gypsies in any other story.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had a completely different reason for why they got caught, because the original story, the reason they got caught was somebody found the horse of Thomas.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's when they knew that something was amiss, because the horse had apparently got out or something. Anyway.
Mustn't have been.
They didn't put a mustache on it to disguise it. Anyway, Jarman was able to get away with these murders for many years until one traveller that fell asleep in the booby-trapped bed woke up, got out of the bed to use the chamber pot.
Mm-hmm.
As he turned, he spotted the head of the bed tilting down and saw the boiling bat below. The men's shouts awoke the other guests and Jarman's murderous activities finally came to an end.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that that report nowhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So just this blog spot.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're making shit up. Anyway, let's keep going.
Well, I remember quite some time ago after we'd actually gotten back from the ostrich inn, I did find somewhere, and I looked really hard and I couldn't find it anywhere again, the whole story about Mrs. Jarman being hung
Yeah, I remember them telling us about her being captured and she was still in her nightie and they took her out. They told us that.
Yes.
But anyway, look, I'm going to keep going with blogspot because they're obviously such a wealth of information. So seeksghost.blog. So they found this quote, which was an original account of the murders. So this is like a witness statement.
Right.
Let me read it to you. It's in oldie English.
The oldie English.
So we're going to have to try and do my best.
Right.
This man should then be laid in the chamber right over the kitchen, which was a fair chamber, and better set out than any other in the house. The best of bedstead therein, though it was little and low, yet was most cunningly carved and fair to the eyes. The feet were fast nailed to the chamber floor in such sort that it could not in any wise fall. The bed that lay therein was fast sewed to the sides of the bedstead. Moreover, that part of the chamber whereupon this bed and bedstead stood was made in such sort that by pulling out of the two pins below in the kitchen, it was to be let down and taken up by a drawbridge, or in manner of a trapdoor. Moreover, in the kitchen, directly under the place where this should fall, was a mighty great cauldron, wherein they used to see their liquor when they went to brewing. Now the man appointed for the slaughter were laid into his bed, and in the dead time of night, where they were sound asleep, by plucking out the forestead pins, down would the man fall out of his bed into the boiling cauldron, and all the clothes that were upon him were being suddenly scalded and drowned. He was never able to cry or speak one word. Then they had a little ladder ever standing ready in the kitchen, by the which they presently mounted into said chamber, and there closely take away the man's apparel, as also his money, in his mail or cap case. And then lifting up the said falling floor with hung by hinges, they made it fast as before. The dead body they would take presently out of the cauldron and throw it down the river, which ran near unto their house, whereby they escaped all danger. Now in the morning, any of the rest of the guests that had talked with the murdered man over eve chanced to ask for him, as having occasion to ride the same way that he should have done. The good man would answer that he took a horse a good while before day, and that he himself did set him forward. The horse of the goodman would also take out of the stable and convey him to a hay barn of his.
That's an amazing witness statement,
isn't
Anne?
It?
How can you get that?
Well, I have a theory. Now, this is where I found the gold.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to jump now over to an article by the Fortean Times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you didn't find this one, did you?
Hit me.
All right. So this is where I entered the rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I said earlier, the soundscape came from this particular person, Dr. Tom License, which is from the Fortean Times article. So, the first report of ghosts is actually from the 1970s. We've had no ghost stories before that time.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And there were even some books that were written about haunted inns, and it never made it into that those books either. But there was a landlord in 1973 who told the author of the book Haunted Inns, "I feel there can be no doubt about the murders. A legend like that just can't start by itself." And this landlord, whose name was Lamont, showed the author a window in an upstairs toilet through which the Jarmans were said to have peered into the adjoining bedroom to check that their victims were asleep. And they have the working model of a tipping bed, which they keep in the bar, from a much earlier one which had worn out from age and use because it was a working model. So the ghosts were thought to be those of the guests who perished in that said cauldron.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that, of course, is going to attract TV shows to come and do their thing.
Yes, it does.
So in comes Most Haunted.
Yes.
So in 2002, they arrive with a vet Fielding and parapsychologist Jason Carl and medium Derek Acora.
Yes.
Oh, we do love Derek.
Oh, we do love Derek.
So Fielding introduces the venue, setting the story about, you know, all the things that happened there. It's said that in the 14th century, an evil landlord called Jarbin committed gruesome murders. So Carl goes around looking for disturbances with the EMF fields. They've got the thermal guns out looking for cold spots. And then Derek arrives.
And he immediately goes into a trance.
Of course. So he uses psychometry, whereas where you touch something and then you tune in.
Mm-hmm.
So Derek Acora tunes in and he picks up on the names. Jarman.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Cole.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez, he's good, isn't he?
Oh, he's amazing.
All right. So he said that Jarman was an evil man who killed lots of people. Then he was drawn to the kitchen with the aid of his spirit guide, Sam. Where he becomes visibly distressed. Would you like to do an example of Derek Acora becoming distressed? Oh, 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 oh. Is that him?
No.
You never watched him? How can you be a proper medium if you can't do that?
I have not. The only thing that I've seen is Someone Loves Dick.
Oh, Mary Loves Dick. We'll put that up on our True Hauntings page. You right. have to watch
I've
that.
I've only seen Mary Loves funny. Dick.
Anyway, he's drawn to the kitchen where Sam becomes distressed and saying a lot of souls lost their lives here. He then begins to gasp for breath and enacts the experience of being boiled to death in a big tub. Anyway,
Carl asks
whether they can talk with Jarman, but the latter is unresponsive. Apparently, Jarman doesn't want to talk. And he said it was an oppressive experience. So then, of course, the Ghost Club comes in, as I mentioned, some of their report earlier, and they do all their stuff, and they're, of course, drawn to the Blue Room as well. But let me read you something. About the year 1598, a writer, Thomas Delaney, published a novel called Thomas of Reading, in which the eponymous hero Thomas Cole is murdered by the innkeeper Jarman and his wife while staying at the Crane in Colebrook. The couple, whenever they spied a rich guest, would set the fat pig in a special chamber above the kitchen where the bed was sewn to the sides of the bedstead, which was nailed to a trapdoor in the floor. By pulling two iron pins below, it would let down on the hinges the dead of the night, tipping the occupant into boiling cauldron beneath and killing him instantly. In Cole's case, however, the couple made a mistake, leaving the stable door open. Cole's horse bolts and is discovered. Jarman flees and his wife confesses to 60 murders.
No.
Can I just read that little bit again? Published a novel called Thomas of Reading.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So let me go over. I've got more. Just play. Buckle up, sister. We're going down.
Derek's good, I have to
Derek's
say.
Oh, Derek's fabulous, isn't he?
Derek is on point in this particular, yep.
He's read the book.
He's read the book. They've read the book and they've fed him so many lines, it's ridiculous.
Oh, it's just so bad.
Yep.
So this particular author from the 14 Times, which was the Dr. Tom, did some digging because, you know, he wanted to see. This particular author was well known for taking real stories and turning them into
novels,
right? Mm-hmm. So he wanted to dig down and see, is there any actual facts to this story? So the first thing he did was to start looking to see if there was anyone by the name of Jarman associated with the Ostrich Inn. Because in the book, they don't actually mention the name Jarman till the very, very end. They refer to Thomas all the way through it, but not to the innkeeper.
Yep.
parish records. So that, I mean, we're going back a long way.
Mm-hmm.
Parish records mention no one of this name, either in Horton, the parish in which Colnbrook is situated, or Langley, its neighbour. There was a man with a similar name, John Germain, in 1332, which is where I think we get all these different centuries from.
Mm-hmm.
One of the richer parishioners, and then again in the year 1575, the baptism of Germain, which was a daughter of John Germain. So no records.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it could have been. There could have been someone there from that time, but it's just maybe the records weren't kept as well as they could be. So there's also no record of any Jarman or Jarmaine standing trial for murder at the London Assizes, nor of murders at the Ostrich Inn. In the novel, the culprits are hung. So there would be some sort of record.
There would be.
Mm-hmm. Of that happening.
And to add to that, in the book, it was never called the Ostrich Inn.
Mm.
It was called the Crane.
Yes, which they mention over at the very start there, the Crane in Colnbrook.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently there is some sort of murders that have happened. In the reign of Edward I, and that was in 1272 to 1307, the bodies of 13 murdered persons were supposedly taken from the Ostrich to be hurled into the Thames. One slipped from the cart and landed on a strip of land called Welly, which separated the parishes of Horton and Datchet. Horton refused to bury the body because Datchet agreed to do so. Datchet that day claimed the land and received the rates for the disposal of the body. I don't know. That was, but that's all we've got in relation to these murders or something. Yep. There's nothing else there.
Yeah.
So it does indicate that somebody has disposed of some victims or something, and it's possibly similar to the Jarmans. Story of throwing the and dumping the bodies into the river, but it's sort of really sounds to me like a dispute over boundaries of parishes and things like that and who owns what. But yeah, so now let me go to this little quote. So going back to the Ghost Club report, to give them a little bit of credit here, they did include an excerpt from the book or the story, Thomas of Reading, and this is what they've got here. Her wicked counsel was followed, and when they had listened at the chamber door, they heard the man sound asleep. All is safe, quoth they, and down into the kitchen they go, their servants being all in bed, and pulling out the iron pins, down fell the bed and the man dropped out into the boiling cauldron. He being dead, they cast his body into the river. His clothes they made away and all things as it should be. But when he came to the stable to convey thence Cole's horse, the stable door being open, the horse had got loose. And with a part of the halter about his neck and straw trusted under his belly, as the ostlers has dressed him, O Eve, he was gone out at the back side, which led into a great field adjoining to the house, and so leaping divers hedges, being a lusty stout horse, he got into a ground where a mare was grazing, with whom he kept such a coil that they got into the highway, where one of the town meeting knew the mare and brought her and the horse to the man that owed her. That sounds like they had a bit of a frisky time in the paddock before they were caught. Anyway, they've cited this as to say that they think the ghosts and the legends are associated with this story and that it's a true story, right? So that, do you see where I'm getting at with that? The Ghost Club is saying that because of this quote,
mm-hmm.
that the legends of the Ostrich Inn or this book
mm-hmm.
is based on
a true story.
Based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
Take you back to the eyewitness account.
Mm-hmm.
that was quoted by the Blogspot.
Mm-hmm.
I got online and I found this Thomas of Reading story.
Mm-hmm. And it's word for word?
It's word for word, word from the story.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, in actual fact, this whole ghost story is based on a story created by an author.
Yep.
There is no links to any living person or similar murder whatsoever in this whole wide world.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got ghost hunters that are going in there who are getting evidence of this whole story.
Mm-hmm.
The innkeepers are saying, oh, yes, this happened. This is the room where the bed was. We have Yvette Fielding and her team who were apparently told about this Thomas of Reading book.
Mm-hmm.
They knew it was a story, but still they went in with it.
Yep.
And Derek Acora quoted the ghosts of the inn.
Yep.
Because he read the friggin' story.
Yep.
I'm actually somewhat disgusted.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, my dogs. Say hello to my dogs, everyone. They've obviously found a demon outside the door who they're trying to protect the realms from. So, Renata, is this place haunted?
Now I feel even more stupid after doing this, sitting for an hour, looking at the shower in that room.
I know. And look, the thing is,
and we got nothing though, did we?
We
got nothing.
No vibes whatsoever. No. And we stated that at the time. We said we're feeling nothing. And I remember sitting there going, this is bizarre because this is such a horrific thing that happened here. Surely we'd be picking up on something that happened.
Yeah.
But there was nothing. But we did have a terrifying moment for some guests in.
Yeah, we did. We did. We'd gone up into the room. We'd been allowed in by the landlord. He opened the door and said, stay as long as you like. Yeah, so we had some gadgets on the bed and we were sitting down on the floor.
And now, the room was full of EMF, by the way.
Yeah, it was. And prior to this, we had had dinner. And the dinner was fabulous.
Delicious.
Wonderful. And I overheard a conversation with some people in at a table nearby, and they were talking about the fact that this was a haunted place.
And they were a little drunk.
And things happened upstairs in the room, and maybe later on we can go and just walk down the corridor and stand in front of the room and listen in. Well, while we're in there, sitting quietly doing a silent vigil, we hear voices coming up the corridor. And then they stop directly in front of the door that we are sitting on the other side of. And we can hear the lady going, this is the room. This is it. This is where all the things happened. This is where the trap door was. This is where they fell down into the kitchen area below. And Anne and I just look at each other and go, will we? Won't we? Will we? Won't we? Yes, let's do it. So we've crawled over to the door.
Well, I didn't crawl. I walked quietly.
And just as they're talking, we grab the handle, turn it, and we hear on the other side, the handle's moving. And we open the door and screams ensued from all of them as they start to run down the corridor going, oh, my God. We stopped them, of course, and went, it's okay. It's only
we're
us.
We're real. We're real. And we have a pulse. It's us. It's okay. And then we invited them in to do a little bit of ghost hunting with, and they were in awe. They were taking photos of us and the equipment everything. It was like, no, we're just happy for you to come and sit with us, guys. It's fine. Come and experience what we do. But, yeah, that was hilarious.
It was hilarious. It was a gorgeous moment.
And then we stayed there the night, but in a different room. And the rooms themselves were beautiful.
Yes.
They were comfortable. Mm-hmm. The beds were lovely. The food's great. So, look, even though this hasn't turned out to be a true haunting, I'd go again anyway because it's such a beautiful location.
Mm-hmm. It's so close to Heathrow Airport.
Yes, it is. And, it was a great story that's then come from that whole experience.
Mm-hmm. But it is a story.
It is a story. and it's published online. You can read it.
Yep.
Anyway, that brings us to the end of this week's episode of True Hauntings. I hope you have enjoyed this little bit of a true crime episode, it turned out to be. So we will be back next week with another episode. In the meantime, please, please share this episode around. Let people know about us so we can build our audience. Join us online on our Facebook pages. And also, we've got some YouTube things there. We're live every week and you can ask your paranormal questions. So much to do with us, isn't there, Renata?
There is.
So until next time, see you on the dark side.
Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of True Hauntings. If you like the show, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. For more on Anne and Renata, follow at Anne and Renata on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or visit their website, www.anneandrenata.com. True Hauntings is a part of the Human Labs Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.